Good morning, and welcome to the Thursday, February 17th meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Baymuth?
Present.
Representative Drafkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson is excused. Representative Wongamott?
Present.
Representative Shum?
Present.
Representative Joaquim?
Present.
We have 16 members present, one excused. We have quorum.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Sandstead, have you had a chance to review the minutes from our Wednesday, February 16th meeting?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have. So moved.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Sandstead motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the Wednesday, February 16th minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Members, I'll remind you that this week we've spent significant time discussing the serious staffing shortages that public schools are facing and a variety of solutions to keep staff in their school communities. Some of these shortage issues certainly have been exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, roiling our schools for now the third academic year, but many of them also were underlying and present in school communities even before the pandemic. As I've said each day this week, the bills we're discussing are good for workers, good for schools, and especially good for students who rely on a continuity of caring adults in their lives to thrive and learn. Today, we're focused on a solution that was featured in Representative Olson's author's amendment to House File 2133 earlier this week that the committee adopted. If we believe that all work has value and dignity, the question is how we support that in public policy. Closing this exception and treating school hourly workers like others would be one way to do that. I'll turn it over to Chair Noor, who I understand will be then turning it over to Representative Greenwood. Chair Noor, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony and presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Devney and members. An important conversation on the workforce, in fact. As I speak to you, I just picked up my son from school because of the challenges that we're just talking about. I'll be here to respond to any questions in regards to the bill. I'd like to turn over the conversation discussion to Representative Greenman, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Representative Emma Greenman, and I am grateful to be in Education Committee. I think this is my first time on such an important bill. This is, Chair Dabney said, this was in Representative Olson's bill. It's also policy in House File 1035, Chair Noor's bill, 1054, my bill, and House File 3000 in Representative Katizu Atun's bill. This is legislation that will end the exclusion of hourly school employees from our unemployment program. It's important policy that will provide tens of thousands of bus drivers, paraprofessionals, education assistants, lunchroom staff, and all those other folks in the building the same access to benefits that other Minnesotan workers already have when they're unemployed. What this bill does is simple. It adds a provision to current law providing that hourly school workers who are doing jobs for which no license is required can use their wage credits from the school year to collect unemployment if they're otherwise eligible for those unemployment benefits between the school terms. In other words, this bill removes a blanket exclusion to current law that prevents hourly school workers from being able to access unemployment insurance during between academic terms. We know these Minnesotans are doing important work in our schools, caring, feeding, educating, supporting, and safely transporting our kids. This simple policy change is critical as we recruit and retain these critical school staff. It's critical to keeping them in our schools so they can continue to support and care for our kids. It provides stability for our students in our classrooms by providing economic security for our school workforce. As I know you all have been talking about all week, we have a staffing crisis in our schools. I know I'm hearing about it from parents in my district. I know that you've been studying it. The shortage of school bus drivers means parents are left to figure out how to get their kids to school, like Chair Knorr. It means that kids and classrooms are left with insufficient support that ESPs and paras provide. It's stressful for our kids, our teachers, our school districts, and the workers themselves. Our current law makes it harder to recruit and retain these workers that our school relies on. These positions are often high turnover and low pay. Most Minnesotans need to work year-round, and these hourly school workers are no exception. Many of them are living paycheck to paycheck, and they need that paycheck to support their families. Excluding these workers from unemployment insurance, as our current law does, makes it harder to retain them, as workers sometimes decide to move on to other jobs when they're essentially laid off at the end of a school year without the certainty of a paycheck in those summer months. The current exclusion means that we're losing valuable staff, and our students lose those important relationships with caring adults. The status quo isn't fair and it isn't working. These Minnesotans are playing critical roles, providing one-on-one support to students with disabilities, ensuring our kids are nurtured with healthy food, providing a safe environment to get our kids to and from school, and much more. The workforce is majority women and often people of color. They're workers who get a lot of lip service from the public about how important they are to our schools, and they are. But this exclusion means that they're denied the same economic security of unemployment insurance that other workers in industries with seasonal employment have. For instance, landscapers or resort employees are eligible for unemployment when they're laid off, but these hourly school workers aren't. The Minnesotans who are driving bus, preparing school lunch, and assisting our kids deserve that same economic security as other Minnesota workers. It's important for our kids, it's important for our families, and it's important for these workers. A simple policy change that could have critical impact on our schools, our students, and the lives and livelihoods of these Minnesotans in our schools. I think with that, I will turn it over to, I know we have a presentation and a set of testifiers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenman, for that presentation, for that start of our discussions today. Members, we do have one of those benefits of virtual hearings with us today. We have Dave Camper, Senior State Policy Coordinator for the Economic Policy Institute, who is able to join us. I believe it's from Illinois because we are operating virtually. Mr. Camper, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your presentation. Thank you for joining us today.
Chair Gaffney and committee members, thank you for having me. My name is Dave Camper. I'm a Senior State Policy Coordinator for the Economic Policy Institute. I'm going to share my screen now. And if Chair Daphne, would you just give me a nod if you can see the slide? Outstanding, thank you so much. I actually am, today, I live in Brooklyn Park now in what I found out on Tuesday is the new 34B. I'm honored to be here to address this committee. I know some of the committee members from other endeavors in my life, and it's a pleasure to see you in this context. Before I go into my research, let me just briefly introduce our organization. The Economic Policy Institute is a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank. It's based out of DC, Washington, DC, but I live and work remotely here in Minnesota. We do research on the impacts of economic trends and policies to help working people get better wages, better benefits, and better jobs. The part of EPI I work in is called the Economic Analysis and Research Network, or EARN, which is our part of our organization that faces towards the states. And we have almost 60 partners in states around the country. The one in Minnesota that you may be familiar with already is the Minnesota Budget Project. Outstanding people, which I hope you make use of as you go. The research I'm presenting today is from a piece my colleague Julia Wolf and I prepared last spring with updated numbers from EPI's economic indicators and some of our most recent reporting on school staffing shortages. We were able to write this report because Illinois passed a very similar bill affecting non-licensed school staff in 2000, and the Illinois Department of Economic Security conducted its own analysis on that impact, and we therefore were able to compare the characteristics of Illinois' non-licensed school staff to Minnesota's to arrive at estimates of what it would mean in our state. Let me begin by discussing who we're talking about. And if I move through these charts too quickly, please do let me know. Never in my life have I ever been accused of speaking too slowly. So don't hesitate to stop me if I'm going too quickly. This is data from the Census Bureau's American Community Survey on the composition of school support staff. As you can see, women constitute an overwhelming majority of this group, and Black and Hispanic workers are more likely to be employed in this group than in the overall workforce. Let me note before I move on that when we use national data here, it's because the economic analysis analysts at EPI are not confident that the sample size of state-level data is sufficient to give us an accurate picture. I'm pleased to work for an organization that has such a high commitment to ethical data use. I cast no aspersions upon those who use the data to come up with state-level numbers. I just want to make clear that I'm giving you the most detailed Minnesota-specific data we are comfortable using. Another important note about school support staff is they are much more likely to be over age 50 than other workers. And while you and I all know that age discrimination is illegal in the United States, I would not be surprised if older workers might sometimes have trouble finding summer jobs compared to younger workers. And that might be something to be borne in mind as the committee considers this issue. And as I'm sure you know, these slides are also on file with links with the committee administrator, should you want to look at the links later. The typical hourly wages of non-licensed school staff are lower than that of the overall workforce. As you see here, the overall workforce is $19.38 an hour, whereas food preparations all the way down to $12.24, bus drivers $15.58, teacher assistants $15.34. However, showing the hourly wage is only part of the story because, of course, many, if not most, hourly school employees do not work an eight-hour day or a 12-month year. And so this chart shows the typical weekly wages of school support staff. And this would be weekly wages for the weeks in which they are working. So it would not count the times they are not working. To take an example from these two charts, bus drivers, which I think we've all identified as an area where there's significant shortages, they have an hourly rate of pay 20% less than the typical workers. But when you would take account the shorter hours of the job, their weekly pay is 40% less. So 20% less hourly, 40% less weekly, because they don't generally work a 40-hour week. And that probably explains why a significant number of them are leaving these jobs, but I'll speak to that a little bit later in the presentation. I want to switch and quickly talk about the overall economic context. The first thing I want to note is that while Minnesota had an amazing year in the last year for jobs, adding 167,000 jobs, that's a heck of a year. We are still 109,000 jobs below where we were before the pandemic began. I know that the term labor shortage is used a lot lately, and there's something to that in certain parts of the economy. But the bigger picture issue here is that a lot of the jobs are still missing. And the primary, indeed, main culprit is still the ongoing pandemic. So as you see here in this chart, change in jobs in Minnesota since February 2020, 108,900 fewer jobs than when the pandemic started. This is reflected also in the national context. Overall, we are nationally 2.9 million jobs fewer than we were before the pandemic started. If we account for population growth, we're 4.5 million jobs fewer. If job growth had continued on the trend that it had prior to the pandemic, we have 7.4 million jobs. And there's an argument for picking any of those three numbers to use, but in any context, we have fewer people working now than we did before the pandemic started. And if you look specifically in the school context, you can see that this is a very substantial issue as well. And you can see, again, the bus driver number really sticks out here. But in all K-12 employment, we have significant reductions in staffing. And I want to make, I didn't make a slide for this, but before I go on to my next point, I want to address also what's been called the Great Resignation. It is indeed true, the data is very clear, that the rate at which people are voluntarily leaving their jobs in the last few months has never been higher since this data has been recorded. It's off the charts high compared to what we had before. An incorrect conclusion drawn by some is that these people are quitting their jobs and leaving the workforce. And that has led some people to claim or to be concerned that unemployment benefits are too generous and are tempting people to stay out of work. In truth, if you go industry by industry and look at what the rate of people are quitting their jobs, the rate at which that industry is hiring people is higher than the rate at which people are quitting their jobs. What is happening is people are quitting their jobs and leaving for better jobs with better pay, better benefits, better working conditions. So it's not people leaving the workforce, it's people shifting into different jobs, which is why at EPI we sometimes refer to this not as the Great Resignation, but as the Great Reallocation, as workers are reallocating themselves into jobs that make more sense to them economically and in terms of their working and living conditions. And again, I don't want to focus solely on bus drivers, but the work hours of a bus driver starting very early in the morning, going to very late in the day with often times off in the middle can be a very, that's a challenging job schedule to work. And it's not a surprise to me to see that large numbers of people have left that profession to other work that has more stable hours and potentially higher pay. Another point on the broader economic context I'd like to make is that the industry sector that's seen the biggest job losses since the pandemic started is leisure and hospitality, which includes restaurants, hotels, resorts, tourism, and all sorts of related jobs. And the reason I mention this is because while I don't actually have data that backs this up fully, I think we all know that in a state like Minnesota, with our lakes and our parks, leisure and hospitality is a significant source of summer employment for lots of people, including school support staff. And for the foreseeable future, it's likely there are going to be fewer such opportunities. Hopefully, our expectation is this will clear up as the pandemic does, but I just mention it as a point that we think is worth making. So I want to move into the question of calculating both the costs and benefits of summer unemployment for non-licensed school staff. You've got a number of questions that are challenging to answer. For example, we know that some non-licensed school staff work for a school district year-round. That depends on the needs of that district, what kind of programming that district has, what kind of job the person has. There are some school districts that have clerical employees that work 12 months, and sometimes they work just the school year, custodial employees. If there's summer school, you might have paraprofessionals who work all year, and other times not. There's no clear way to know that for sure, year to year in a different school. And we also don't know how many people right now in the school workforce already have summer employment lined up, things that they already do and they already go to. And so this leaves, the reason this matters, it's very difficult to estimate both the need and the cost of this change in unemployment insurance if we don't know how many people it's going to be affected or how many people are going to be affected by it. And that's why this evidence from Illinois is so important, because Illinois tried this, and for non-licensed school staff, they chose the same population of people as we would, as this bill chooses in Minnesota. And so we have very good comparable data. In Illinois in the summer of 2020, there were 121,153 weeks of unemployment claimed. And that's an odd way to use the statistic, perhaps. But if we look at it across the workforce in Illinois, approximately 11% of the non-licensed school staff in Illinois took unemployment in the summer of 2020. So if, and remember there's an if here, if that pattern is followed in Minnesota, we have approximately 62,375 non-licensed school personnel, and that includes public schools, private schools, charter schools, all K-12 institutions, because at least it's my understanding that all those institutions are covered by this proposed bill. We estimate that 75,753 weeks of unemployment would be claimed by approximately 6,800 employees. Since unemployment compensation in Minnesota is 50% of average weekly earnings, there are exceptions to that, but for what we're dealing here, 50% is the number that's most useful. Our estimate is that $4,058 would be the average summer benefit to non-licensed school staff who take this. $4,058 is a significant sum to underpaid school support staff and would go a long way to improving their lives and improving their stability, their family stability, and would also make it easier for them to stay in these jobs. Looking at the overall costs to Minnesota, if we do the basic math of $738 of weekly wages times 50% benefit times all those hours, we get a number slightly under $28 million annual cost for this. Now, this is an estimate, but it's our best guess estimate based on the comparators from Illinois. If the comparison from Illinois holds up, this is what it'll cost. I will note that the total school district fund balances in the state, calculated by MDE, are a little over $2.6 billion. So this would amount to about 1.1% of school district total reserves. Now, of course, that's not evenly distributed across school districts. But the point is, in terms of overall school spending, this is not that much. And it both reflects the fact that unemployment benefits are not terribly expensive, but also speaks to the larger thing that spending on non-licensed school staff is not a large aspect of school district costs. The truth is these employees are underpaid, and it doesn't cost school districts a lot of money to pay them, and so paying them unemployment doesn't cost a lot either. I'm going to wrap up in just a second here, but if the committee will indulge me a moment of personal reflection. 20 years ago, I was living in Illinois, and I was working for an education labor organization in that state. And I was working with folks in Havana, Illinois, which is a tiny little town in central Illinois that I wouldn't be surprised if you'd never heard of. And I knew a school support staff there. She was a special education assistant. And if you know anything about the work of special education assistants, it is emotionally draining, physically challenging, and vitally important to the work that people do. This person, she had to turn her utilities off in the spring and in the fall because she couldn't afford them. It was central Illinois, so you had to have them on in the summer. And it gets cold enough there, she had to have them on in the winter. But during the spring and the fall, she'd get home at the end of the day to a house without electricity, without running water, without the ability to turn on a stove or even use the bathroom. She would do her laundry in the school. She would use the restroom in the school. She would take showers there because that was the only opportunity she had. And I got to tell you, that sits with me. And I would like very much to see a world where the people who are doing that kind of important work for special education professionals are not forced into that situation where they have to turn off their utilities because they can't afford them. So I thank the committee for its time. Chair Dabney, I appreciate it. And I will stop my screen share. Thank you so much.
Well, Mr. Camper, thank you for that. And my apologies for mislocating you. It sounds like you came home to Minnesota from Illinois quite a long time before I gave you credit for it. So thank you for that presentation. Are there questions from the committee for Mr. Camper? Seeing none, we can catch up later. I trust you can stay with us, Mr. Camper. Very good, thank you for that. We'll move on now to other testimony. I'd like to start with Ms. Melissa Haley. Ms. Haley, if you would please unmute, introduce yourself for the record and then proceed. Ms. Haley is a parent, and as is the practice in this committee, we want to center the experience of students and families in our deliberations, and Ms. Haley brings a parent voice. So thank you for that. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Davney. My name is Melissa Haley, H-A-L-E-Y, and I live in St. Paul with my husband, Tim, and our three children, age 13, 17, and 19. And two of our kids attend schools in the St. Paul School District. Our 17-year-old son, Emmett, is a 10th grader. He has a rare genetic disorder called Smith-Magenis syndrome and autism. He is a very capable young man, and when he has predictability and consistent support, he excels in many areas, particularly the areas of his interest, like playing Mario Maker on the Nintendo Switch or choose your own adventure board games with his support staff. There have been many, many caring adults in our son's journey thus far that have greatly impacted him, at least before the pandemic, enabled him to stay safe, learn, and feel a part of the school community. One major predictor of how well a given school year would go for Emmett are the relationships he develops with the adults who support him at school, and that for those relationships to develop, there needs to be consistency. I want to focus a little bit in particular on the support workers, paraprofessionals in school, although all the areas, all the folks that this bill addresses are folks that are important to my son Emmett at school. I asked Emmett last night who his favorite helper was, or who his best helper has been at school. Helper is what he calls the people who support him at school. And he said, without pausing very long, probably Jesse. Jesse was a middle school para for Emmett, a very, very caring man who developed a very strong relationship, mutual relationship with Emmett. He rode the bus with Emmett to and from school every day in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, which we realize is very lucky given the turnover in paras these days in our schools. He helped Emmett interpret social cues, bridge interactions with peers, and modified academics for him. He helped him with his job at a coffee cart on Wednesdays, which Emmett's a very social guy. So his job was taking the orders, the coffees, and delivering them to office staff, the principal, teachers, and people throughout the school. Jesse would help him stay on track so that he'd be successful and make it back to class on time, usually. Emmett knew Jesse loved donuts, and Jesse knew that the lunchroom could be too noisy and would proactively give Emmett the choice to have lunch together and chat at a table away from the kitchen. And over time, with the consistency and the caring of his one-on-one para, we saw growth in communication, academics, and belonging in community. Emmett went on field trips to Grand Slam in the Mall of America pre-pandemic with his class. And he even joined the adaptive bowling team in seventh grade, in part because Jesse was one of the coaches. We are truly fortunate that this man took the time to really get to know Emmett and advocated for him throughout middle school. Helpers matter, and Jesse is still connected with Emmett, visiting him once a month during the school year and working as one of his support staff in home in the summer, the last two summers. And he is not in it for the money. He too values the relationships. I support the bill that you're discussing today because it recognizes the values that these helpers play in our schools, how vital they are, and the importance of continuity and stability in them. The pandemic has made the shortage of hourly workers, especially paras, even more dire than before. This bill is an important investment that will pay big dividends in access, consistency, and belonging across Minnesota school communities. So thank you for your time listening to my story today. I appreciate it. And if there's any questions, I could answer those.
Thank you for joining us today, Ms. Haley, and sharing your son's story. Much appreciated. Next on our list is Amanda Reinick, Buffalo Hanover Montrose School Board member. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Reinick. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Davney and members. My name is Amanda Reinick. I'm a school board member for Buffalo Hanover Montrose Public Schools, and I teach pre-K for Wayzata Public Schools, where I work alongside some of the workers we're focusing on today. So like every district in the state, Buffalo is experiencing severe staffing shortages. It's difficult to find subs, and everyone is going above and beyond to try to cover. We have more kids with emotional and behavioral needs than we had before the pandemic, and they need more academic and social support. Not just the students receiving special ed services. Everybody's kids are not at their best yet. There's just no way the same person can monitor the hall and help a kid with reading at the same time. We're asking fewer people to do more work, and it's a recipe for burnout. Every time one school staff member burns out and cannot be replaced, it makes things that much harder for everyone else. School staff with 5, 6, and 10 years experience are worth their weight in gold because relationships and experience matter. Substitutes don't know a student's IEP. New drivers don't know where kids are supposed to be dropped off. Staff need to know the students, and they need to know and trust one another. That's why turnover is such a problem. But every summer, we lose staff. Buffalo is a small community of about 17,000 people. We've got a Walmart and a Target that pay $15 to $16 an hour, and we're competing with them for talent, and in many cases, we're losing. It's no wonder we can't get people in the door for these jobs, and when we do get folks in the door, it's very hard to keep them. These jobs used to be sought after, very popular in our community. Now, when people leave for the summer, they often don't come back. I want our district to offer this benefit to our workers to help us recruit and retain the very best people to work with our kids. But it will take an act of the legislature to get us on an even footing with every other employer. Thank you for taking the time, and thank you for your work advancing this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Reinick, for that testimony. Next on my list is Renee Biggerstaff, a Sauk Rapids administrative assistant. Ms. Biggerstaff, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Dabney and members of the committee, thank you for having me here. My name is Renee Biggerstaff. I'm an administrative assistant at our Sauk Rapids Rice Middle School. I work with report cards, transfers, attendance, and support students in their mental health. Let me tell you, the need has grown. When our students really feel the pain of the pandemic, the counselors and mental health professionals in our office are always fully booked. Every year I receive cards and emails from parents and students telling me they love coming to our office. They leave feeling calm and feeling good. I am extremely proud of the work I do. My mother-in-law was a head cook in our school district for many years. When I told my husband that I was interested in this job, he was worried about how he would make it through the summer because his mom had experienced the challenges of not being able to find work in the summer. It is hard to find short-term work and not being able to have unemployment insurance. Just like her income was important to her, my income is important to my family, and my coworkers' income is important to their families. We budget the best we can every summer, but we fall behind. Our payments are never delinquent, but they're often not on time either. The first check in September feels like I can take a deep breath. Things were different in the summer of 2020. We didn't know what would happen in the fall. We were working, but not in school in person. And orders from our governor, Waltz, executive orders didn't come until late in the summer as how we would reopen. All that added up to workers like me didn't have a reasonable assurance of a job for the fall. So for those few months, I was eligible to collect unemployment compensation. Of that little bit of breathing room, I didn't have to wonder if I could have my granddaughters over and have food in the cupboards to feed them lunch. And then when we could go to the park, we could stop by and get an ice cream that summer. Kids love to be at school, and it's tough when they can't be there. They need support from caring adults like me now more than ever, but what we need to be able to care for ourselves and our families. Thank you for fighting to extend unemployment compensation for workers like me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Biggerstaff. Much appreciated. Next, another parent, Leah Harp. Ms. Harp, welcome to the committee. Appreciate your taking the time to be with us today. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, this is Leah Harp. Can you see me?
We can. You're sideways, but okay. Other than that, you look great.
Am I no longer sideways?
You're right side up.
Okay. Apologies for technical difficulties. My name is Dr. Leah Harp. I am a polar for life. My autistic son, Lev, attended Minneapolis Public School since 2018. He's a ninth grader now at North Community High School. Spotlighted your video for everyone.
Yes,
you're doing great.
Okay. He's a ninth grader at North Community High School in Minneapolis. He's an engaging, bright child with significant sensory processing and language and learning challenges. When he began middle school in Minneapolis, there was no paraprofessional for him, although it was in his IEP. After a very difficult week, which made us reconsider our decision to move to Minneapolis, they began having sub-paras come in from the district. These people were unknown to the school staff. They changed weekly, if not daily, and were not invested in my child nor in the school. After 6 weeks of anxiety and agitation, the school hired Mr. Bruce Cochran. Mr. Cochran provided academic support in general education classes and ran the lunch bunch every day in the autism program classroom for the rest of the year. He was warm, dependable, consistent, reliable. My child had a safe place to be part of a community of peers at lunch. He could function in classes. It was great. In May, for some reason, Mr. Cochran was assigned 3 additional students in science class for a total of 5 students. These 3 new kids had a lot of support needs, and their anxiety and sensory needs were expressed in ways that required Mr. Cochran's immediate attention. My compliant, quiet child was unable, therefore, to receive para support and stop being able to engage and understand science class. Thankfully, it was near the end of the year because nothing was happening for him in this class. And I want to just make clear that the wonderful science teacher, Ms. Palmquist, she was busy managing 40 plus students who had all of their own needs. It was the para, Mr. Cochran, who made it work for my son. And it was the para who really cared about Lev and knew him and knew what his needs were. Last year, my child worked with Daniel Raskin and Wadden Middle School for both distance learning and in person. And because of distance learning, I feel I got to know Mr. Raskin in an unusually intimate way. And my child found distance learning even more stressful and challenging than in-person learning. And Mr. Raskin and the team decided that for science and social studies, after the main presentation, my kid and a few others would have a small group pull out with Mr. Raskin to try to make sense of what the heck was going on through the computer. Suddenly, my son's stress level plummeted. He stopped pacing. He stopped his repetitive stressful utterances. He stopped complaining about school. He loved school. He was complaining, didn't want to go. That all ended. Even when my child didn't really get or engage with or enjoy what they were talking about, I could hear Mr. Raskin's patient voice gently leading him and the other kids back to what they were talking about. He was always there. He was patient. He cared. He had a relationship with my child. He knew my kid and how to work with Lev. And for a kid like mine, expecting Lev to function independently in the general education situation is impossible. With kids running around, talking, whatever their needs are, the pace of learning, he couldn't do it. My child, he's fragile, he's distractible, he has multiple learning challenges. General education and resource teachers can't run their classroom and support my child's educational process. A random adult who doesn't know my kid and doesn't know Lev's unique and complex support needs can't have the relationship nor the understanding to support my child in school. These phenomenal paraprofessionals we have had, they formed a relationship with him. They liked Lev, they cared about Lev, they developed a sophisticated and complex understanding of Lev, and with patience and persistence supported my child. They made my child's public school experience possible. They deserve solid pay to be part of a professional team and to receive support and respect they need to provide this crucial service to my kids and kids like mine. I hope you all will support this piece of HF 1035 to ensure that these essential professionals have access to unemployment insurance. I can't even believe I'm saying this about Mr. Raskin and Mr. Cochran. I mean, it's horrific what these people do for our children. And it really, so thank you for inviting me. Thank you for listening. And thank you for considering what Lev needs to be in school.
Thank you, Ms. Harp, for that. And our hearts are certainly with the North High community these days.
Thank you.
Next on the list is Kelly Gibbons, Executive Director of SEIU Local 284. Ms. Gibbons, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Daphne and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Gibbons. I am the Executive Director of SEIU Local 284. I'd like to thank you today for letting us tell our stories. So my story is not about being the executive director. Back in July of 2001, I was a school bus driver, and that's how I got engaged in the union. So here's the newsletter, and here's me in a picture at the unemployment office in West St. Paul. I drove school bus for 18 years. I was a single mom of three. There was times I didn't know how I was going to feed my kids because there was no unemployment. It was hard to get another job. I usually worked two jobs during the school year as a lunchroom supervisor also. But there's no way to save for the summer because you're always on catch-up mode because you never work a full 2 weeks out of a school year. Folks don't know that kids are always off school. There's parent-teacher conferences, and then there's no pay for the hourly school workers. Unemployment would have been a lifesaver for me, and luckily, you know, I managed to get through it. But my experience was like, I don't understand how I don't have any work, and yet I don't qualify for unemployment. And to me, unemployment is supposed to be a safety net for workers who, when there is no more work, they actually qualify for a benefit to get them through till work stops or continues again. So then fast forward 18 years later, after driving school bus, I just no longer could afford to stay in the school district. So I took a job driving a tandem dump truck. I worked at a construction company for 5 years, which was mostly a male-dominated industry. And lo and behold, I got unemployment. Now you can say, well, they don't have reasonable assurance that they're going to be working every year. Well, I pretty much knew I was going to be working every single year. I didn't know exactly where, but I always worked and always got unemployment. It's to me was discriminatory. And I said that back in my newsletter way back when, in 2001, when an industry of mostly female dominated people and women of color are excluded from a benefit that the male dominated positions get. And, you know, I can't believe it's 21 years later and we're still having this conversation. This is a safety net that workers need. When I drove school bus, I had to have a commercial license and a school bus endorsement. I drove around the most precious cargo in the world. And it was a dangerous job. You know, people don't realize we drive down slippery roads and you got 70 little kids screaming and jumping and doing everything they've got to do. But that was the most important job in the world to me. And I loved that job. I would have never, I still would be doing that job had it been for unemployment. My mom drove school bus for 31 years. My grandpa, my sisters, a lot of us were the people that liked doing those jobs and working with the kiddos and taking them to school every day. It's also good for the kids to know they have consistency. When I did that work, I knew who they were. I knew when their parents weren't home. I knew if there was a problem. Our drivers who work for the school districts, they know when these children are having a bad day. They know if their parents aren't home, you know, if they're dropped off and somebody drives by and says, hey, Susie Q's sitting out on the front step and it's 20 below, there's another driver picking them up to bring them back to make sure that they're safe. The work people do in schools is the most important work to me that there is. And so, you know, now as my job as executive director, 4 years ago when I came back, I'm like, we cannot stop having this conversation. This is the cost of doing business. A school district is an employer, and the cost of doing business is making sure that their workers have what they need to be successful and take care of their families. It's ridiculous to think anybody has to go 3 months without a paycheck. And a lot of these people are single parents. And so we have kiddos who need our help. So, you know, I just wanted to be able to tell you like how we got here, where we've been and where we're going. And if we don't do it now, then when? So I just would like to thank you for having the opportunity to speak today. And I'm hoping that everybody will see the need that this is the solution for the worker shortage. This is what we need to retain and attract these workers and keep them working in our schools. Thank you so much and have a great day.
Thank you, Ms. Gibbons. Next on our list is Yasmin Maridi, a bilingual education associate from Highwood Hills Elementary in the St. Paul School District. Ms. Maridi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everyone, committee members. I'm here today for an unemployment insurance for unlicensed school staff. My name is Yasmin Meridi, and I am a bilingual EA and bilingual education assistant at Highwood Hill Elementary School. I speak three different languages. Plus English, and I want to speak to the unemployment insurance for hourly school employees. As the ESP, we serve students, parents, teachers, and administrators. We are everywhere in the whole district, and we bring on the table our knowledge, skills, and our cultural experience. The first staff students see when they come to the school is a smiling educational support professional. However, the wage and benefit and the work are in balance. Our ESP wear so many hats to help our students and their family. During COVID-19, our bilingual were teaching technology to parents who grow up in a refugee camp who didn't have any electricity or running water. Who was teaching our parents? Who? They were our ESP, our educational support professional. They were running from school to the IT building to fix iPad or deliver hotspot or delivering food or any other resource to our communities. We do all of this work during the school years, but many of us are not supported in the summer months. We are invisible heroes who people don't often pay attention to. We are exhausted. Many ESP are leaving the profession because we don't get paid enough, and we have to scramble to find unemployment in the summer. We need job security. Without us, our school wouldn't function. We have been fighting for this for too long. Other seasonal workers already have this benefit. Why don't school employees have it? If we want our kids to have a quality education, we need to provide quality support to the workers who support our students. Please pass this bill to extend unemployment insurance to our school workers. Thank you. And I do understand when we have a special students, when we ride in bus, our paraprofessional, they buy extra sensory toys to calm the students. Or if something triggered, we have to know what triggered him and what can calm him. Our professionals don't have that kind of wage, but still they care about our students. And we pass that knowledge to the new one. So why we need all the time to look for job every summer? We need to find a solution. So you are here for that. We need you to pass this bill. Thank you for listening to me.
Ms. Moridi, thank you for taking time out of your day to join us today. Next on our list of testifiers is Jody Primrose, paraprofessional at Riverside Elementary in the Brainerd Public Schools. Ms. Primrose, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jody Primrose, and I am an educational support professional at ISD 181 in Brainerd, Minnesota. I am also on the negotiations team for ESP at the ESP union in our district. There are approximately 179 ESPs in our district right now. Recently, I was able to survey 116 of them. During the school year, 53% of the surveyed ESPs have to work a second job during the school year just to make ends meet, and 80% surveyed have to find other employment during the summer. I would like to share my story and implore you to approve hourly school worker unemployment insurance. I have been a full-time educational support professional since 2010 and an employee of this district since 2005. In 2009, I began the process of a divorce that led to a foreclosure and bankruptcy. I became a single parent with two elementary age children. I wasn't receiving child support. During this time, I worked full-time for the school district. Because of this job alone, I was not able to cover my bills, and I had to work two and sometimes up to four jobs just to make ends meet and support my children. Each year, as winter turned to spring, I began to search for temporary summer employment. During these years, it was considerably more difficult due to low wage from the district, the burden of finding temporary summer employment, and on top of that, the cost of childcare. I was not receiving any child support for my children. After accounting for living expenses and childcare, there was rarely any money left to put into a savings account. In 2015, my family partnered with Habitat for Humanity to build a safe and affordable permanent home for my family. My kids are now 20 and 22. My son graduated from St. Cloud State University this past May and has a career in his field of study. My daughter will graduate in December of 2022 with a degree in elementary education. I am grateful for my job and I love what I do. It is still a struggle to support myself during summer months, and I know that many of my colleagues agree. Educational support professionals are a vital and essential part of our school system. Extending unemployment insurance to hourly school workers would put us on the same playing level with other seasonal workers and would help retain school workers during the year. I want to thank you for this opportunity to share my story and for letting me weigh in on the legislation that would greatly impact the well-being of ESPs in Minnesota. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Ms. Primrose. Next on our list is Jennifer Langland, a school bus operator from the Minneapolis Public Schools. Ms. Langland, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Langland. I'm a school bus driver of 27 years. I am a trainer and a third-party examiner for Minneapolis Public Schools. So in the 27 years that I've been a driver, I've seen a lot of really, really good bus drivers leave. A lot of it is with the training that we have. We sometimes will get, you know, maybe 15 new drivers through the year. And, you know, once MEA comes, we lose a couple drivers there. Thanksgiving break, we lose a couple more. Winter break, we lose a couple more. By spring break, we've lost about, you know, half of them or three quarters of them. The people just can't make it without, you know, permanent employment. Summertime, you know, by summertime, they're looking for other jobs. And like myself, the first 5 years of driving, or maybe it was the first 10 years of driving, I was like, I'm going to find a summer job and I'm going to stick with it and I'm going to not go back to school bus driving. But, you know, the kids have touched me in a way where, you know, you're driving an irreplaceable cargo and you just keep on coming back for those smiling faces. And you just struggle through the summers. And by passing this bill, you would really help myself and my coworkers and the children that need and depend on experienced bus drivers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Langland. Next on the agenda, Teresa Jakubowski. My apologies. District 196 bus driver. Ms. Jakubowski, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chair Dabney and committee members. I am Teresa Jakubowski, a school bus driver for District 196. I have testified in support of unemployment compensation for hourly school workers in every committee and at every press conference since 2020. With all that talking, I feel as though I'm not being heard. Minds are already made up before we open our mouths. We can reason, we can shout, we can cry, and yet we're facing another summer without the same basic economic security that other Minnesotans have. I appreciate the work that has been done. Thank you, Emma Greenman, for authoring the standalone school UI bill. Thank you, Chair Neuer, for including us in the jobs bill last year. And thank you all for fighting for us in the conference committees. It was quite a blow when the Republican-led Senate removed us from the bill before it was passed last year. I'm back testifying again today because the bill is as urgent as ever. We have a shortage of bus drivers, paraprofessionals, food service workers, and other hourly workers who keep the schools open and functioning. Even before the pandemic, we suffered through the summer with reduced hours and small paychecks. In a normal year, we drive charters and extra routes during the spring and fall to save up for the summer. Of course, during COVID, there were no charters or extra routes. School workers who have had second and third jobs usually work in hospitality and other service industry jobs that have still not recovered from the pandemic. I have worked as a bus driver for 9 years. It took me 7 years to earn $32,000, an amount I made at my last job when I earned only $16 an hour. After 7 years, I had reached our district's top pay of $23 for bus drivers. Working 40 hours a week, except of course in the summer, in 2021, I earned $36,000. $32,000 was made during the school year, $4,000 during the summer. I want to point out, after listening to Dave give his information about drivers or people in these hourly employees, if I had a different job, if I was working for anyone else and worked 40 hours a week, I would have earned $52,000 with that same wage. So that is all the time. I mean, I have off 6.5 weeks of unpaid time during the academic year, and I have 7 unpaid weeks during the summer. That's what's taken away all of our incomes. We're not supplied with holiday pay. We're not supplied with vacation pay. We have to work within the school calendar. So those numbers are a perfect example of why UI benefits are so important to hourly school employees. My income dropped $6,500 in those 3 months. This loss is through no fault of my own. I am available for work, but the hours are not. Is this not the requirement for applying for unemployment? The school district needs drivers for summer school, but an employee cannot earn enough to live. I have to rely on credit card debt to get through the summer. Having access to unemployment would probably provide me with under $3,000 in extra income. Not a lot, but enough to not use a credit card to pay for household essentials during the summer. We love our jobs. We love the kids. Before there was a vaccine, bus drivers transported essential workers to and from daycare, essential workers' children to and from daycare. Paraprofessionals were reassigned as daycare workers, where they doubled as teachers. Food service workers made sure our communities didn't go hungry, and custodians kept the buildings clean and safe. We were all exposed to COVID, and many of us got it. I myself was sick with COVID in December 2020. But we had to go to work when most of the state was encouraged to stay home, and we did it because we care, and it is our job. Each summer, since the beginning of the pandemic, there was an exodus of school employees across the state, especially bus drivers. People found other work and never came back, but I stuck with it. Now, even I am past the breaking point. By the time we dig ourselves out of the hole from summer, we hit Christmas break and go 2 weeks without pay. We dig out again in the time for spring break, and then it's summer, year after year after year. We never get ahead, just enough to not fall too far behind when the next school closure hits. Unless we get this little sliver of economic security, I'm done. I can't afford to work so hard and still fall behind for another school year. Without unemployment insurance for this school year, I'll find work elsewhere. I'll miss the kids, but I've got to prioritize my family. The task of trying to change the UI law has been going on for years. We are so close, and we have this House of Representatives to thank for working for us. Do not accept any deal that puts money into the pockets of the business owners, but leaves out workers like me and the thousands of others who care for our state's children. I've spent years testifying, speaking at press conferences, meeting with the governor, and doing everything else in my power to get this bill passed. Make me a believer in this system again. Pass unemployment insurance for school workers and pass it with a bipartisan vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jakubowski. Next, and I believe last on our list today, is Rachel Stoffel, middle school clerk in the St. Paul Public Schools. Ms. Stoffel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. My name is Rochelle Stoffel. I'm a member of AFSCME Local 844 and Council 5. We represent workers in St. Paul Public Schools. I work as a clerk at East End Middle School, and I've worked in the district for 27 years. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. I'm here to support House File 1035, and I thank Representative Knorr for authoring this bill. I think that allowing workers like me to access unemployment insurance will protect them if schools ever have a situation where they might not be open for weeks or months at a time. And it could also address the biggest retention issue for school employees. I hope that my experience helps you to understand why this change is important. Back in the summer of 2020, I faced a serious dilemma when the school year ended. Usually I could count on 3 seasonal catering jobs to replace my school income until school restarted in the fall. However, I had 2 problems. First, none of the catering jobs were available. As I'm sure you all remember, COVID had everything shut down, and catering and other hospitality jobs were hit especially hard. This was incredibly challenging and an emotional letdown because I really enjoy catering. My coworkers, however, at those jobs had a fallback. They had access and were able to collect unemployment insurance as that was their employment and not the school systems. This is where my second problem came up. When I tried to apply for unemployment insurance, I was initially given a benefit, but soon after my case was placed into a pending status, and I didn't know what I could do to change that. My job for most of the year at ESTEM, because of my job at ESTEM, for most of the year, I was barred by state law from receiving uninsurance employment benefits. And when I spoke with a unemployment insurance representative, I was informed that I had reasonable assurance that my job would return in the fall, so I wouldn't be granted an exception. Though I was less certain than he was that at that time that I would return, I did thankfully get to come back. Unfortunately, my catering jobs never did come back. 2 are done for good, and while 1 came back, it isn't enough to get through the summers. During that first summer, I pulled money out of my deferred comp, and I know others within the district sold family heirlooms, took out credit card or loan debt, took equity out of their homes, really did anything to get by. Others left working at the school district altogether because our school jobs for the majority of the year just isn't enough anymore to pay our bills. Without access to unemployment insurance, working in classrooms, on school buses, and in administrative support roles in schools just isn't as viable a job as when we're required to go without income for months at a time. I just think that school workers deserve access to unemployment insurance. We aren't different than any other workers that have off seasons, like construction workers. We depend on income year round. Our bills don't stop. I hope that you pass HF 1035 and make unemployment insurance work for all workers that need it. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Stoffel, and thank you to all the testifiers today. Questions from the committee for any of our testifiers? Representative Feist. Sorry, I didn't see your hand initially.
No worries, Mr. Chair. I wasn't thinking we'd have time, but as long as we do, I just wanted to thank all of the testifiers for sharing their stories and bearing their hearts. I was really moved. We stare at screens all day, so I oftentimes have my camera off, but I'm here and my colleagues are here and we hear you, and I just wanted to thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank the testifiers as well. During the interim, I work as a paraprofessional with kiddos with special needs in a few different school districts, so I just get a brief taste of the job that you do every single day, and I just want to thank you for that and say a special hello to Amanda Reinick, who was my youngest son, who is now 22. Sorry to age you, Amanda. She was just starting out. She was a baby when she was his preschool teacher. But he still remembers her. And that just shows you the impact all of you make in our children's lives as they grow older. And it really means a lot to me to hear this bill I hear many of the same stories from the folks that I work with in the schools every day. And this isn't just a matter of what's right. This is a matter of fairness as well. And I want to thank Representative Greenman for carrying it. And, you know, really lift up to the struggles we're having getting bus drivers in our schools. We're so important to get our children to school because having that gap in their hours, you know, you think of us as members who work part-time. I'm one of those who didn't have, the other job I had before I started here was in the Senate. So I couldn't really continue that. So I've had that experience of trying to go out and hustle for that part-time job when you know you're going to be leaving again in a few months. And there's not a lot out there for them to fill in that gap. And it just doesn't seem fair that they can't access unemployment when they don't have continuing contracts from year to year. Their districts expect and want them there because the relationships with the students really matter, but they don't give them those continuing contracts so that they can, that they know that job is there and they don't get the pay to make it work. And trust me, I know one of the testifiers talked about how important relationships, quite a few of them did, parents and workers alike, about the relationships with children and how that really helps them excel. I have been in a school district where I've worked 3 months in the same classroom, and I've also been a sub this last year. And those relationships, I can tell you firsthand, really do matter. It is a lot tougher to walk into a situation as a sub, especially with some of our kids that have high needs, than it is to walk back into a classroom where I used to sub and the kids still remember me. So I just want to lift up all your voices, and I hope that folks are hearing how important this bill is. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Any other questions or comments from members today? Seeing none, then members and testifiers, thank you again.
I had one more I just thought of, and I wrote it down. And I forgot to ask, and it was for Mr. Camper. You had, and then it was another testifier had mentioned 30% of their employees have a second job. But Mr. Camper, when you were looking, when you were going over the numbers from Illinois, did I hear you actually say that although this, the bill in Illinois covered all the same folks that we're talking about, you only had an 11% uptake? Was that accurate?
Mr. Camper?
Chair Gaffney, thank you, Representative Youakim. Yes, in Illinois in the summer of 2020, 11% approximately of those non-licensed school staff were applied for and took the unemployment. Now, there's a few factors that could play a role in both sides of this, if I've got a moment to elaborate on this. Thank you, Chair Dabney. On one side, I rather suspect in the summer of 2020, as we heard from some of the testifiers, some of the jobs that those folks might have taken were unavailable, and that would have potentially pushed the number up. On the other side, it was a new benefit that had only been passed into law, I think, in March of that year. And while the organizations representing those school staff put out tremendous amounts of information to encourage uptake, it's also possible there's some share of people who didn't hear about it. Now, there's no way to measure that. My guess is they probably canceled each other out. But if somebody was able to do the research, you could look at the tax records of the Department of Revenue and see how many of these folks are employed 12 months a year. We didn't have that data. So the 11% was the number in Illinois. It's the best guess we have.
Thank you, Mr. Camper. Representative Youakim, any follow-up on that?
No, thank you, Chair Dabney. I just want to make sure I heard that. And that does make sense. Some districts, very few districts, do a really good job about continuing contracts and or finding fill-in time during the day or raising their wages enough to make this a livable job. But the most important thing I want people to take out of this is that it is an absolutely necessary and essential job for our kids in our schools, everything that these folks are doing. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Youakim. Representative Jordan, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did want to just mentioned to Mr. Camper that I grew up downriver from Savannah, so I'm very aware of the need for heating and air in that part of the world. But I just really want to put a finer point on something. So this question might be for Mr. Camper, might be for Representative Greenman, if she is still around. Are there other, we have unpacked that there are lots of seasonal jobs or temporary jobs where you can later apply for unemployment when you're, when there are gaps in that. Are there any other professions apart from our hourly school workers that are unable to apply for unemployment during these gaps?
Mr. Camper, is that a question for you to start with or Representative Greenman?
Chair Daphne, my answer is there might be and I don't know. So I'll pass it to see if Representative Greenman might be able to say.
Sounds good. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan. And I might actually have to phone a friend on Representative Knorr, but it is my understanding, this is a very specific provision in the law, and I think it's rooted in what Ms. Gibbons referred to, traditionally sexist notions of the who the workers are and what they do. It's actually been there for a long time. It's an old version of this. So I think it is one of the, I don't want to say with certainty, but it certainly is the biggest group. And I don't know if Representative Knorr can say with certainty that it is. And just to be clear, this is an exclusion that folks have to still show that they're eligible in all of the other ways that folks show, but in other seasonal work, like landscaping, like construction, folks have access.
Chair Knorr, can you help us?
Mr. Chair, is this in regards to the reasonable assurance section for the employees?
I'll ask Representative Jordan to restate her question for Chair Knorr, please.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think part of the reason that we're having a bit of a struggle with this is partially my point, but Chair Knorr, are there other types of seasonal work where, so we've talked about how people in landscaping or construction, or even when mines are idle, they are able to apply for unemployment. Are there any other sectors beyond our hourly school workers that are, would have a temporary job where employees are unable to apply for unemployment assistance during gaps in their employment, especially
if they're
already paying into unemployment? Sorry, Chair.
Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Jordan. I don't see any other group. We took care of the seniors and seniors, as Chair Daphne will call, for the senior high school students who were excluded by 1939 law. We fixed that issue. And we also took care of the Social Security offset for those who are receiving Social Security benefits and the UI. We took care of that. So the only section that we are left with right now is the hourly school workers who've been left out from that fix. So this is the moment that we have to step in and make sure that the hourly school workers are also included in. Bear in mind that they're required to find employment, and that's a requirement during any application process. So they have to follow the rules and guidance that are required for anyone applying for the employment benefits. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan, any follow-up?
Yes, I have one other follow-up. And so Chair Knorr or Representative Greenman, just to be clear that these hourly school workers are paying into unemployment while they are working for school districts, correct?
Chair Knorr?
Mr. Chair. The hourly school workers, because they work for a school district, they're considered to be reimbursing employers, meaning that we only pay when they request. So if anyone in the school district or working for state government or a tribal government, they're considered to be also nonprofit entities. They're considered to be reimbursing employers. And that's how most of them will fall. But there are some who work for third party groups who are independent. They pay into because they have regular employees, but they're also caught up in this process of having reasonable assurance. So they're also excluded from the numbers of eligible individuals for the UI.
Thank you, Chair Knorr. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Daphne, and thank you, Chair Knorr, for that answer. I think it's, and from what I'm hearing from all of our testifiers is that these are full-time jobs. And what we've heard from these aren't full-time jobs, but these are jobs that are important and they're part of the fabric of our society. I think hearing from parents, especially about the difference that this makes in their child's life and their life beyond even their school walls, just means that we need to make sure that we're taking care of these employees and putting them into this and showing them the same respect and taking care of them in the same way that we take care of any other worker, whether they work in construction or whether they work in the mining industry or any other industry where they could pay into this and then have some reassurance during summer and during idle periods that they can be taken care of. So I really want to thank Chair Knorr and Representative Greenman for bringing this forward. And thank you to all of our testifiers for really showing the importance of this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Greenman, any closing words?
I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you for this, the hearing and for all the good questions, and especially for the testimony. I think we heard that this is actually a simple policy. We heard that it will deepen and help strengthen the relationships that these workers have with our kids and how important that is to their education. We heard how important it is to the staffing crisis that we know our schools and school districts are dealing with. And we heard how important this was to the workers and their families to be able to do this work that I think we heard over and over again. People say, I love this job. I love what I do. And I love working with kids. And we heard parents say how important that relationship is. And so this is a critical change. And I think what we heard from Ms. Gibbons and Ms. Jakubowski is we have to get this done. Folks have waited too long. This is a retention issue for our schools. We need to do that this year. It's far, far overdue, but this is the year to do that. And so I hope that folks take this testimony, and I hope we don't have to have you all come back. I hope that we can celebrate with our colleagues across the state and across the aisle and making sure that we get this simple policy done for all of our students, our families, and all of you who are caring and driving and nurturing our students. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. And members, with that, we've concluded our work for the week. Enjoy your weekends. We will see you back next Tuesday. With that, we are adjourned.